earlier, and we thought we had very good fees when we started off. So there is always room to improve in terms of what you can do with your vendors rather than just looking at the crew or the maintenance standards on board.
I would like to alert the audience and the operating expense. Shipping is a capital-intensive industry, so it means, in other words, that we manage and operate very expensive assets, the vessels. Compromising on the operating expense beyond the limit is counter-effective. We cannot afford, as a company, as companies, as an industry, accidents. So we have to make sure that there is a limit of how low we could go on operating expense. And as we said before, productivity makes the difference. Don't look at just numbers.
Although I would prefer that our competitors, no one at this table, but our other competitors maintain their ships in such a way that they really have to scrap them after third special survey.
Moving on perhaps to one of the issues that was brought up earlier, and that's on counterparty risk. There's actually been, in the market for the last little while, despite it being at such depressed levels, it's actually been relatively quiet on the default and company failure rate. But what are the panel members doing to protect their companies from potential counterparty risk? George, at the end.
It's always been a focus, sort of credit exposure and the credit we run. We have a team that analyzes and sets limits for any counterparty that we do business with, so it's always been a very strong focus for us, and will continue to be, if not more so. So we do our best not to run large exposures with companies that we deem not worthy of those of the risk that they're running. I think another question now, though, is it comes, it's not just counterparty. On the owning side, we've had, we need to see what the banks will do. We've had ships arrested, and that obviously is something that's quite hard to mitigate for. So that's also something we're concerned about.
Well, in my opinion, I think that even though the dry bulk space is a highly fragmented industry, you have thousands of owners and all that, the recent crisis has in fact created a two-tier market. You have the higher quality companies that you see them on the fixture list with the quality names all the times, and you have the not so quality owners that are basically nowhere. I mean, if you look at the fixture reports every day, you see the same and the same and the same names, because this is what Cargill, what Bunge, what Rio Tinto, what BHP is basically reporting. But everybody else is disappeared. You have thousands of ships, and you only see the same names every day. So, in fact, it has created, like I said, a two-tier industry. And that is good, actually, because last year, even up to, the beginning of 2015, we all thought that the dry bulk space is totally commoditized. You didn't care about the quality of the ship, you didn't care about the quality of the owner, and everybody have, the same thing. It's, whoever got the cheapest ship actually got the job. Nowadays it's different. Not only you have the bank issue, like George said before, that the banks may arrest the ships, but you also have the bunker providers, you have the crew supply, the crew operators, you have all these people that can, one way or another, disrupt the ships. And if you have expensive cargoes on board, having a ship on arrest with a cargo loaded for a month or 2 months is a very, very expensive exercise, much, much higher than what they would pay for a certain voyage from point A to point B. So I don't think that the charterers should take any unnecessary risks by chartering with substandard owners.
Yeah, I say it's obviously we're in a fairly unique situation here where it's not just shipping that's distressed. With all the major industries that we're involved in, steel or coal, all the major commodities are also very distressed. So we also have credit risk on the cargo side as well that needs to be mitigated, or at least you need to be very wary about that. So from an operating point of view, we have it on both ends of the trade.
I would say that it may sound a bit strange, but counterparty risk is actually higher in a good market, because at that time we fix longer term with good rates, and if the market turns, then charterers may walk away. Today, I think the biggest issue is probably with the suppliers, that a supplier may go bust and you're left in a port with a big issue. Otherwise, if a charter disappears in today's market, we fix short term with very low rates. You just put the vessel back in the market. It's usually at similar rates. But in a good market, then it is a big issue. And back in 2007-08, when we were fixing 5 and 10 year contracts, we had a special team in the office just spending time and analyzing credit risk. And back then, of course, we managed to get an insurance, which we don't have anymore, but it was very important for us, and it paid in the end. When the market went south, we received a lot of cash from the insurance company.
I mean, even if you are so pessimistic as to fix long-term in today's market, if the charterer disappears, you haven't lost much.
For a shipping company, the counterparty risk refers to the charterer. And irrespective, as George said, of the status of the market, whether it's good or bad, I think we should focus on getting more transparency of the status of the charterers. So far, the ship management companies and the vessels themselves are very transparent. You may look at the classification society records, at the right ship, you name it. Nevertheless, we don't see that transparency in the charterers' world. There are charterers with reputation, but I think there is more work to be done. Thank you.
Perhaps if we move on now to more towards the investors and finance side, what are the investors that you talk to and the banks that you talk to saying? How do they see the market, and how do you convince them of the positive future within it? How about to Pankaj?
Well, I'm the poster child of the PE investment from 3 years ago. The way the PE world looks at shipping today is a bit different from 3 years ago. All those guys who invested obviously are trying to see if they can actually find a reasonable exit. That's not today, obviously. They've obviously found out both on the tanker side and on the dry bulk side that it's not easy to exit shipping. These are illiquid assets. There is a second-hand market, of course, you can sell, but it's if they do that today, whether it's on the tanker side or the bulker side or on containers, it's at a loss. So nobody is running for the door, so to speak. Most people probably know that PE money is generally about 7 years, and then they can get extensions on it as well. So we haven't seen anyone run to the doors as yet and try and exit these investments at a loss. So they are patient, they will wait. I don't see any panic selling as yet. In terms of new money, that is scarce. I don't think, especially for dry bulk, you can find money now. There are a couple of investors who are left with some money from their investment, who did not invest all of it in the last couple of years, who are taking advantage. Averaging down. There are some new investors who have come into the market on the margins and buying some. But in general, you find where the money is coming from is Greece. The second-hand market, the people who are picking up ships, I think 7 out of 10 ships going out are to the Greek market. People have deep pockets over here, got out of shipping or out of their investments a while back, and they're getting back in. Guys who were on the tanker side who are getting back in. So that's where I think the investment is coming from. On the banking side, as far as I see, there is no money available, which is good for shipping. So people are not going out and ordering vessels. Nobody's running to the shipyards. The second-hand market prices are cheap enough that everyone's focused on that.
So, George, from Navios's point of view, do you agree that the lack of new money coming in is good for shipping, or do you want to see continued investment?
No, it's very good for shipping. I mean, the PE, when the recovery started in 2012-13, PE money destroyed the market again with all the new building orders that they placed, with not a lot of knowledge on shipping at that time. So lack of fresh money, is very good. And even if we go in the summer now and there's another dip in the market, that will also be good, because that will accelerate scrapping again, which is the only way to get out of this bad market. You know, on the dry bulk, we always had this self-correcting mechanism. But as long as there is some hope that the market will recover, people tend to hold back and not scrap the vessels. So I think even, again, it sounds a bit counterintuitive, but if there is another dip now in the summer, I think that will help a better and long-term recovery in the market.
And Stamatis, what's your view on the investor sentiment?
Well, the investor sentiment is unfortunately very, very grim, I would say. I mean, if you think about it, all these people lost billions and billions of their investments in the last, I don't know, 5-10 years. So how can you convince someone to invest in a dry bulk space when all of them have lost, you know, the majority of their equity participations? However, one company, especially those of us that are listed one way or another in the US exchanges or global exchanges, we need to be out there, and instead of you know, trying to say how different we are from one another and why we're better and we have lower OPEX or lower GNAs and all these things, our role now is to convince the investors that now it's the time to reinvest in the space. We are now at the 30-year lows, so in my mind, I think it's a no-brainer for new capital to get into shipping. And I kind of disagree. I don't think that new capital is necessarily bad for shipping. I think that if people have a rational investment strategy and they don't go out and start ordering ships like crazy again, and they, you know, help by buying high quality ships and they maintain those ships and all that, I think that the market one way or another will stabilize. And going back to the point of whether it's a good time to invest now or not, I must remind everyone in the room that in 2012, especially in New York at the time, at Marine Money and Capital Links, everybody was saying, you know, the tanker market is finished and the Suezmaxes are redundant and they're obsolete and all that. So just when you hear the word finished, you know, you see all this recovery happening, and we all know what happened in the tanker space the last few years. I think that, you know, a lot of people have considered dry bulk space as finished again, and all of that will create very soon a very good increase in the market and the rates. But like I said before, we need to be rational. We shouldn't go out and praise ourselves by controlling 30% of the order book and things like that, which in my opinion was absurd. But, you know, on the other hand, try and focus on quality second-hand tonnage and how to improve the current fleet as it is.
Samadhi, if I may say, the words rational and investment in shipping, for some reason, they don't go together.
True, but let me say something. I mean, people tend to throw rocks at the investors in the States, right? They say the PE firms and the US investors and all that. But let's all be reminded that the cyclicality in shipping has existed forever, way before New York, way before the PE firms, way before that. So at the end of the day, people can go crazy at any time. It's not whether there's capital markets or not, just rationality. But I agree with you, it's not necessarily rational.
Yeah, and I hate to try to convince people to invest in shipping. I think it's more, you know, if you're prepared to take the obvious risks, there's upside, and you know what it is as well as we do, but you need time. And if you think you've got the time, you know, here's what we offer. But, you know, I think we've all been around long enough to know that no one can predict the dry bulk market.
As ship owners, you're obviously, in a sense, paid to manage that shipping risk. That's what you're there to do. John, what do you think the payback time is now? For anyone putting money in now, how long before they start to see a return on that, do you think?
It's difficult to predict when you get your money back, but nevertheless, I think overall it's a good market to make an investment, provided you have the liquidity to sustain it. And then you, by taking a prediction of the market, you simply come up with a capital cost, let's say some 2-3 years later, and see whether this is in line with your expectations. But I would like to make a comment about private money, if you want. Of course, it's an open market, it's a free market, everybody is allowed to come and invest. I think we have to differentiate between the very speculative money and the money which is which come with shipping knowledge and a long-term view. I think speculative money simply increases the volatility of the market. It's not good neither for us nor for the speculative investor. But I think at the end of the day, what makes the difference is the policy of the banks and not of the private money, because no matter how much money will come in, they still need bank financing. And this is where the banks have to decide what to do, whether they will support companies with shipping knowledge or simply speculative funds. Thank you.
On a slightly different track, do you think as an investor or as a ship owner, you're better off investing in a single asset class, say Capes or just Panamaxes or just Supramaxes, or do you think there's a better payoff by being diversified across the whole of the dry bulk market? And I say that, you know, as I see, you know, perhaps the Cape market moving separately from the smaller sectors as it becomes much more commoditized and focused on some of the big players. Hamish.
You know, I think in today's market, where every class of vessel is oversupplied, there's no pressure on vessels to pinch cargoes from another vessel class. But in a recovery, you know, you can't have a real Capesize recovery without a situation where, you know, Kamsarmaxes are taking some Cape cargoes. And Supermaxes are taking some Panamax cargoes. You know, I think what you find is in every recovered market, the vessel classes correlate almost perfectly, and that correlation just breaks down in a very poor market such as we have now. So I think it's people may be misled by the, you know, apparent lack of correlation today.
Well, I have a fleet which is focused only in one sector, in Handies, and I chose to go into Handies because I like the fact that it's not as volatile as the Cape. So I think there is a differentiation in terms of how the sectors behave. The Handies are quite industrial, they're almost like chemical tankers in a certain sense. We carry 40 different cargoes. We go to pretty much ports all over the world. We work with probably about 500, 600 different charters, whereas with the Capes, it's 20 charters that control the entire market. So there is a differentiation in terms of the risk appetite that goes with a certain size sector. But I agree, when the market goes up, you cannot have one sector going up. Handies cannot outperform Supermaxes over the long term and so on. When the market goes up, everything goes up together.
I agree with both of you. The only difference is that usually when the market goes up, it's led by the Capes. And that's where you get most of the returns. I mean, the Cape size is the most expensive, of course, of the asset classes, and it has the highest returns. Now, the way we have presence in all asset classes right now. Initially, at Navios, we only had Handymaxes and Panamaxes, which provide a bit more stability, especially on the down market. And slowly we got into the Capesize sector, and I think if you have the scale, you have to have presence in all asset classes. You need the smaller vessels to protect you on the downside and provide more stability, but you also need the Capes to capture the upside.
Back on that point, if I may say, I agree 100% with what George said. I think that the company should have at least two different sectors, at least two different sizes, in order to differentiate a little bit. However, I must say that the two segments must be complementary instead of overlapping. So, you know, when you have Capes and Kamsarmaxes, I mean, at the end of the day, there's some sort of an overlapping in the cargoes and all that. But the best combination, in my opinion, and that's what we try to do in Synergy, is to have Capes and the smaller sizes like Supras and Ultras, which I think have the best complementary among the charterers and everything.
I would say from the operating point of view, I think for us it's very important to have a large fleet under our control. I mean, it varies between it's around 500 vessels that we have on the water at any one time. And we need that critical mass in order to serve the customers we have properly. I mean, they demand so much optionality in terms of switching lay cans, load ports, size of stems, etc. And if you're operating in that spot market, you need to be able to offer that to your customers, and you can't do that unless you have a critical mass of cargoes as well as vessels on the water at any one time. So I think it'd be very hard to operate in the spot market with a small fleet. I don't think you could serve the customers properly.
Thank you. We've only got 2 or 3 minutes left, so I've got one last question for the panel, and then we'll see if there's any questions from the audience. So do any of you have any, what's the key market indicators you look at? Is there one thing? I mean, a few years ago, the whole sort of banking industry was looking at the BDI as a leading indicator for the global economy, and that's sort of fallen by the wayside now. Is there anything that you look at that you use that you think is instructive for people looking at the dry bulk market?
Well, I think that the dry bulk market is probably the most perfect market I know. And the thing about a perfect market is that there are no leading indicators. I don't know if this analogy will work for a European audience, but I like to think of the dry bulk market as being like Wile E. Coyote. And it's either strapped to a rocket or it's off the cliff and discovers that fact. And in either case, you discover you're strapped to a rocket or off the cliff before you can react. So you just have to be prepared for either alternative.
As far as I'm concerned, it's all about three things. It's supply, supply, and supply. As we all know, demand has been ever growing in shipping forever, with the exception of a couple of quarters here and there, but it's all about the supply. All the crises in shipping have all been supply driven, and all the booms have always been because there was a tightening in the supply. So in my opinion, it's all about the supply. We need to see more scrapping, we need to see more, you know, quality operators prevailing over others, and you know, at the end of the day, the demand is there, and we see that every day. There's tons of cargoes out there for someone to transport, but supply is still there. It's still an issue, but it's, you know, we all expect it's going to go away.
So what's the leading indicator?
Well, first of all, it's the shipyards. As you know, there's zero order book right now in the dry bulk space, zero. From 2017 and 18 onwards, it's basically only the VLOCs. We haven't seen anything else. So when you come to a point where people don't order ships anymore, I think you're right on the brink of the recovery.
I used to be an analyst at SSY going way back. For me, it's the other way around. It's demand. It's all about the demand. Supply only follows the cycle in the later stage when the demand has worked itself off, and things are changing on the demand side. And I think the most critical thing to watch on dry bulk is China. And there are various factors that we watch on China, things like the steel prices, steel consumption, real estate prices, and what the government is doing in general. Downturn in dry bulk last year was basically caused by coal. Iron ore still grew at about 6%. It's really coal which has brought the entire market down, of course, along with an oversupplied market. And demand going forward will be driven by the major bulks again, and China is a big, big, big part of that. Over 50% of the iron ore trade is China, and almost now about 15% of the coal trade is China, or 20%. So I think that is the key factor. You know, people talked last year a lot about India on coal, but that turned out to be immaterial, and there are changes in India again where domestic coal is becoming bigger. So I think China is still the key critical factor for dry bulk.
If you can share with me your source of reliable real-time statistics in China, I would be grateful.
I think we're running out, but John, I'd be interested to hear if you've got a comment on this man.
We all agree that shipping is influenced by so many parameters. I strongly believe that the most valuable and important indicator in shipping is our instinct.
Excellent. Thanks very much, everybody. Do we have time for questions, or? Oh, yeah, okay. Well, let's move on to the next panel then. Thank you very much, gentlemen.